Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
And what I'm saying is, how much money, Ed, do we have actually 100% secured for the plant, including all the grants? What's the exact figure?
For the total project to date? So we have cash on hand totals $18,256,299, of which $4,723,907 is ARPA funds. The rest are city funds that are at our discretion. We have grants that have been approved for us to use totaling $43,166,558. We have two pending grants that total $24,567,175. And you add all those up, it's $85,990,000.
So Milton City Council meeting never fails to deliver the drama. This is Mike Cusack, now the leader of the majority, really, the loudest, most obnoxious voice in the room, who always knows everything about everything, even when he doesn't understand anything about anything. And he's asking Ed Spears, how much money do we have, city manager Ed Spears, how much money do we have on hand for this wastewater treatment plant? And Ed explains it, and it's a total of $86 million if you count the pending $25 million. But of course, Mike is quick to point out.
So basically, pending grants don't really mean anything unless they're secured. Is that correct?
That's correct. That could potentially be our gap. The gap we've identified currently is somewhere in the range of $10 to $15 million, but we don't know until or unless council authorizes us to negotiate and value engineer the plant from the $64 million to some lesser number.
So again, this is the plant that they have been working on for years. They've got a site, they've got permits, they've got the funding. If they can't get that last little bit, they know, you know, obviously they can bond that out, but they think they'll be able to get more than enough to do that. Sandy Woodbury, the grants manager, former grants manager, now she's with HR or something. I forget her current title. Anyway, she's been doing yeoman's work making this happen over the years. But the new city council with four new members is on the verge of doing the bidding of the Pitchfork Posse and, you know, going to completely flush all of this money right down the toilet. I'm not using that inaccurately. $80+ million worth of existing and potential money that they're gonna, you know, just throw away because they don't like the location. They've bought into all the lies about that. I was just amazed by all Mike Cusack, who insulted the engineers and said they didn't do their job properly when really he didn't understand the law properly. Who's anyway, I'll just let him speak for himself.
So the $43 million in grant money, what's the expiration dates on those grants?
They're variable, but if you choose to relocate the plant, every single one of those grants is site-specific shovel-ready projects. We presented a specific site and told them we are shovel-ready because we have the permits to construct those facilities on those sites. Moving the site, number one, changes that. And number two, it would put us beyond the deadlines to use those grants. So we would lose the $43,166,558 and the $4,723,000. So that's $48 million in rounding.
So you have that in writing from all the grant providers, and is that correct?
Councilman, we have award letters. We have those award letters.
Okay.
It's real money.
Okay. When do they expire?
They have various dates.
Various states is not answering the question. I mean,
you ever work for a micromanager who thinks they know everything and really doesn't understand anything? Oh, it's a nightmare. Oh, it's just, you know, trust your people. They're site-specific, these grants. Yes, we understand the parameters of them. Yes, we have letters. Yes, they're varying dates. And I'm not trying to avoid your question, but there's a whole bunch of different ones. You want me to give you all the dates right here in the city council meeting? Do your homework, man, Sandy Woodbury.
But once this decision's been made, we have to have a contract for one of those phases. You cannot contract the spray fields because it's not the infrastructure project that I submitted or we submitted. We submitted the disposal system. So we can't do the spray field because if we never get the system by the end of the day, they could say we're ineligible.
Right. And if you, you know, this is again dealing with the ARPA money. If you just pick a project to spend the money by, because the money has to be encumbered by the end of the year for like, you know, by 4 days from now. Or you lose the money. And so you got to pick, and if you just pick a project in order to spend the money, they're going to be like, you're just picking a project to spend the money. That's not allowable.
Here's the glitch, okay? They won't give me those extensions unless we have activity on these grants. That has been my challenge since day one being your grants manager, is that every quarter that goes by and there is no activity on these projects, we lose ground.
Because grant providers don't want to give you money so you can just hold on to it indefinitely and never spend it. They want to see action with their money, or they will stop giving you the extensions. Now, they're pretty generous once they approve a project, but they're not generous without limit. And that's what she, again, is trying to explain. And by the way, again, the Pitchfork Posse, primarily led by some folks, including Penn Mitchell, who live on Cooper's Basin, were upset about the site being in their backyard. No matter what the engineers and DEP all permitted and you know, approved and said is a perfectly decent site and is a normal kind of site, she didn't want it there. And so they led this whole effort with the Save Our Blackwater nonsense and all the various things that have been said. Keep in mind that Sandy Woodbury, the grants person, actually lives on that same basin and thinks this is a great project and has been the one behind it, funding it, making it happen. So it is purely a matter of personal opinion that it's not a good project for that location. But more later, we got to make time for the transgressor ceremony that comes up next. Trust me, there's more. And there's just, it's amazing to watch the Milton City Council. Even now, when you have less so-called conflict because six of the people are all on the same side, basically. Oh, man. It's just, it's amazing. John's got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly. Even 98 looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, Pensacola, Dave Ramsey here. Trust your vehicle to the best auto service center in Pensacola, Bobby Likas Auto Service. For years, you've relied on Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway for maintenance and repairs, and now you have a choice. Keep taking your vehicle to the Davis Highway shop or go to their new location on Pensacola Boulevard. That's right, Bobby Likas Auto Service now has a second location at 8969 Pensacola Boulevard, right across from the Super Walmart. So keep your vehicles running smooth with their maintenance service program, and when your car or truck needs repairs, big or small, bring it to either location. Engine repairs, brake work, transmissions, air conditioning, power steering, and more. They can take care of it. Keep your vehicle on the road with the help of Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway and also on Pensacola Boulevard. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
Did you know the Port of Pensacola is more than just a name? It's the economic engine of Northwest Florida, a strategic powerhouse fueling growth with over 30 top-tier businesses like CEMEX, General Electric Verona Wind Energy, and soon, the world-renowned American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the port has been the heartbeat of our region's success, driving prosperity and opportunity. Discover the force behind our future at portofpensacola.com.
Weather outside is frightful. Gulf Coast Air Care can make indoors delightful. If your heater stinks when it blows, let us know, let us know, let us know. Okay, you get the idea. This is Todd St. Ors from Gulf Coast Air Care. It's heater season, and we at Gulf Coast Air Care want you to think about the seasonal cleaning of your furnace. That awful burning smell is all that junk burning off and out into the house. Call Gulf Coast Air Care today. Our phone number is 934-2768. Hit it, Sarah.
Gulf Coast.
Hi, my name is Michael Dylan Thompson, candidate for Congress here in my home district. I'm proud to be the only candidate who voters petitioned to be on the ballot. Every other candidate paid over $10,000 to qualify, often using either lobbyist or special interest money. As a born and raised Pensacola native, I will fight for my district. I will fix the insurance crisis created by establishment politicians, and I will protect our brave service members who keep America free. We don't need outsiders bringing Washington, D.C. corruption into Northwest Florida. We need new ideas and fresh leadership to fight for us. As your congressman, I pledge to always put Florida first. There's a critical election on January 28th, and I need your vote. This is our chance to take back our voice and send a clear message to the career politicians. We won't let special interests decide our future. Together, we can restore accountability, protect our values, and secure a stronger future for Northwest Florida. I'm Michael Dillon Thompson, and I'm proud to approve this message. Paid for by Michael Dillon Thompson, Republican for Congress, District 1.
Howdy, it's Dave Hoxing, catalyst for the ADX family of radio stations in Pensacola, with warm wishes for you and your family to have a healthy and happy new year.
Hi, this is Cindy, marketing consultant here. Wanted to wish everyone in Pensacola and the surrounding areas a very happy and blessed, prosperous New Year's. Please don't drink and drive. Thank you.
Hi, this is Heidi Huerta, wishing you and yours the happiest of New Year's and all the best for 2025.
Happy New Year!
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio Team, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the voters of California, who recently rejected a proposed increase in the minimum wage from $16 an hour to $18 an hour, which would have been the most compassionate minimum wage in the country. In fact, I propose we shift our language from calling it a minimum wage or a living wage to calling it a loving wage. Because ultimately, evil corporations who don't really deserve their money in the first place need to be coerced into acting lovingly toward their employees who clearly do deserve that money instead. And yes, in California, there are a variety of loving wages. $20 an hour for fast food workers, $25 an hour for healthcare workers, and six cities who already love all of their citizens enough to pay them at least $18 an hour. What continues to baffle us is why the voters of California would choose not to show such love to the workers of the entire state. It's almost as if they believe the Republican lie that raising the cost of doing business leads to increases in the cost of goods and services sold, such that intervening in the market to make it more just never really works in the long run. What a stupid belief. But seriously, why are the legislators in California setting their sights so low? If $18 an hour is good, surely $20 an hour is better. And if $20 an hour is better, isn't $25 an hour superior to that? And if a loving wage of $25 an hour is superior, why not simply bypass all the silly mechanisms of markets with demand signals and supply constraints and just make the lovingest wage of all $50 an hour or even $100? I mean, if we can simply legislate low-skill workers out of poverty with the stroke of our central planning pens, why go part way? It's not as though earning $200,000 a year in San Francisco or San Diego is a lot of income. And why should people with higher demand skills that require more training and expertise be paid more than everyone else? Why should companies and markets be making these decisions instead of the highly informed California voter, who can simply go into the voting booth and vote herself a big juicy slice of economic justice? Which is more democratic? The democracy of markets that respect private ownership of property and free choices, or the democracy of elections that respect only the will of the masses? We say the latter, and we call on the good people of California and the United States in general to pass a suitably aspirational and benevolent national loving wage. Let's pay everyone a minimum of $250 an hour or $500,000 per year and just sit back and watch the wealthy society manifest itself. Just think how easy it'll be to fill all these menial, unskilled jobs if we pay someone $500,000 a year to be a grocery store stocker or an Amazon warehouse worker or even haul trash for a living. The golden age is just around the corner when all can be free from the tyranny of unjustly low incomes. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, actor Daniel Craig, for his serious transgression recently when answering a simple question during a press conference at the Venice Film Festival. The reporter asked, "Do you think there could be a gay James Bond?" In response, the seventh actor to portray Ian Fleming's womanizing alcoholic spy rolled his eyes and said, "I mean, really?
Do you think there could be a gay James Bond?"
I mean, guys, please. Let's be adult in the room for a second.
Thank you. Of course, Daniel Craig's clear deflection of the question with accompanying eye roll indicates the problem. He seems to somehow think it's absurd to even pose the hypothetical, saying thank you, dismissively, after the fair inquiry was dismissed by Luca Guadagnino, the director of Craig's new film Queer, which they were promoting. Now, presumably, Craig reacted that way because he thinks the 007 persona is somehow off-limits to the allures of same-sex attraction. But if James Bond could theoretically be a black man, or a woman, or occasionally at least enjoy a margarita stirred and shaken, then why couldn't he be gay? Why not trans? Why not gender fluid or two-spirit? Perhaps Jasmine Bond will be the next iteration of 007, licensed to kill, in those heels. If the holy acronym string can accept anybody, other than straight white men, of course, why not James Bond? But Guadagnino's response here is even worse. Laughing off this question as inappropriate is a serious mistake. It's not a trivial matter to ask whether 007 might not become a force for inclusion. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch James Bond make out with random sexually enticing men instead of the ordinary female prey he seduces?
There is no way around the fact that nobody would ever know James Bond desires, period.
What do you mean we can't know? Of course we can know. The movie series has clearly told us James Bond is a heterosexual philanderer, a playboy of the First Order, a serial anti-monogamist, a libertine, a rake, a Don Juan, a Casanova, a Lothario, the walking embodiment of every 14-year-old boy's libidinous aspirations. But where are little homosexual boys to place their lascivious hopes and dreams without a powerful, capable, witty, charming, gay international spy to represent them?
The important thing is that he does his missions properly. Having said that...
What? So long as they're only missionary missions? How dare you? This is very serious. So for dismissively deciding that however else gay men might find themselves embraced by Hollywood, there's no hope for them in the spy game, Daniel Craig, we hereby convict you of fourth-degree felony sexual intolerance with enhancements for linguistic violence against the people of the rainbow and inadequate reverence for the holy acronym string, and condemn you to something worse than any villain's implausibly complicated punishment. You are hereby banished by the proletariat of public virtue. The outraged masses have spoken. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to praise the fine work done at dictionary.com this year for selecting demure as their word of the year for 2024. Now remember, the most important thing about the word of the year is that it must do something to disrupt the status quo or make people feel uncomfortable or out of touch. Sometimes the goal is to pick a word that most people have never yet heard of in an effort to gaslight them into doubting their own mastery of the English language. Sometimes the goal is to normalize or mainstream some completely deviant belief or behavior by acting like the word for it is so common already. But in this case, something very different is going on.
See how I do my makeup for work? Very demure, very mindful.
You see, the word demure historically meant someone who was reserved, quiet, or modest. But now, because of the linguistic activism of TikToker Jules LeBron with 2.3 million followers, demure actually means sophisticated or refined.
A lot of you girls go to the interview looking like Marge Simpson and go to the job looking like Patty and Selma, not demure.
Now, through LeBron's tireless efforts, demure has actually come to mean the near opposite of its traditional definition. Although demure was assigned one meaning at its etymological birth, it clearly now identifies as something very different. In other words, demure is trans-definitional, which makes it perfect as a choice for us.
I don't come to work with a green-cut crease. I don't look like a clown when I go to work. I don't do too much. I'm very mindful while I'm at work.
Obviously, we love words that mirror the gender anarchy we so adamantly believe in, because the more words shift, the more words can be used as the litmus test of whether people are properly following their thought leaders in the cultural vanguard of TikTok and other mind-sedating technologies. Remember, our most basic woke principle, change for the sake of change is how we make change itself the only constant. The other nice bonus is how this vocabulary fluid term separates the older from the younger generations, even further isolating young people from their elders who might run the risk of imparting traditions and conservatism to them. So good for you, Dictionary.com. In coordination with the virtue gurus of TikTok and the almighty Chinese algorithm, you have once again facilitated revolution. You were very demure, very mindful.
I'm very modest. I'm very mindful. You see my shirt? Only a little chichi out, not my chocho.
Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Refreshments this week are provided by I Can't Believe It's Not Real, makers of only the finest imaginary food items suitable for all ages and any occasion. Last year, the content creators at I Can't Believe It's Not Real suddenly recognized that all the demands we wokeolites place on food, like it being organic, pesticide-free, conflict-free, justly sourced and shipped only with green technology, make it essentially impossible to ever have truly virtuous food. So they gave up and invented imaginary food. Now all your impossible standards can be met by eating food you invent with your mind. Any flavor, any portion, any ingredients, and 100% guaranteed virtuous, precisely because it doesn't exist. No calories, no fat, and best of all, no emissions. I Can't Believe It's Not Real. Virtue never tasted so good.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
Well, that took a lot longer than I expected. John Pickens has traffic on the 10s.
Yes. No accidents to let you know about right now. I'm not even seeing any delays. I can't even see the screen.
David Wayne, you have a headline for us, sir?
License to Kill in these heels.
Yes, I loved it.
That's all I got.
Jasmine Bond. Where are the poor little gay boys supposed to get their inspiration to become spies from? If not from Jasmine Bond.
So good. So good.
We'll be back.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
There's that tornado right there.
I know.
I told you.
Multiple dangerous tornadoes sweeping through southeastern Texas yesterday. That sound from El Campo. There were no reports of any injuries or major damage, but multiple areas of the South are still under severe weather threats as Americans travel home from Christmas festivities. In Oregon,
storms brought strong winds through the Portland metro area, taking down trees and power lines with it. More than 27,000 people lost power, according to PGE. A few miles north, one homeowner woke to find their driveway collapsed.
Fox 12 Julia Lopez will be back to work on the Hill next week with a battle for the gavel of House Speaker.
Without one, the House is paralyzed. It can't swear in members. It can't pass legislation. And here's the kicker. It cannot certify the results of the Electoral College on January 6th.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now, we've got cloudy skies. It is 62 degrees in Pensacola. A Pensacola man wanted on attempted murder charges. Escambia County Sheriff's Office says 45-year-old Terrence Franklin is wanted for allegedly shooting his roommate twice with a shotgun on Christmas Day. This apparently happened after the two got into an argument at a home on the 3000 block of Michael Drive. Franklin is accused of shooting the victim once in the leg and once in the chest. That victim did sustain serious injuries, but is expected to survive. Well, if you are hoping to adopt a cat or a kitten from the shelter in Santa Rosa County, you're going to have to wait. Santa Rosa Animal Services has temporarily closed cat adoptions due to an illness in some of the cats at the shelter. Adoptions are expected to resume now on January 2nd. Animal Services says they want to make sure all of their cats are at full health when they're adopted. The shelter does say dog adoptions and off-site adoption events are still happening this week. Pensacola's new welcome sign at the foot of Three Mile Bridge is now under construction. That sign was designed by Brianna Spence. It was part of a contest earlier this year. Her design features a pelican. City officials say up to 100,000 people could see that sign every day. The city did share video yesterday showing the construction. Currently, a steel frame has been put up at Bayfront Parkway and Gregory Street. An investigation continues after a drive-by shooting last Friday on Garden Street.
This individual, the victim, was sitting on a bench at the convenience store at the corner of Garden and Pace, and a vehicle pulled up. The driver rolled the window down on the passenger side and shot through that window and hit the individual in the knee.
That is PPD's Mike Wood. He says investigators believe that the two men were familiar with each other. The victim's injuries were not life-threatening. Wood says the investigation would likely be concluded soon. So far, no information on a suspect or a motive has been released. Well, Navy sailors that refused the COVID-19 vaccine could have their records cleared after a lawsuit settlement recently. This comes just about 3 years now after that suit was originally filed by the religious organization First Liberty Institute. According to the Navy Times, the Navy will have to clear records for sailors that declined the vaccine for religious reasons. The suit was including about 2,000 sailors. The settlement stipulates promotion boards cannot consider any adverse information related solely to COVID-19 vaccine refusal in cases where a religious accommodation was requested. The Navy is also going to be on the hook for about $1.5 million in legal fees. Commanders who review religious accommodation requests will also have to undergo additional training. Officials in Baldwin County looking into a possible meth lab explosion. Channel 3 reporting that law enforcement, firefighters, and ambulances were called out to a scene on Eagle Lane near County Road 64 on Christmas Day. Neighbors said they heard several explosions. Those explosions reportedly came from a camper, which ended up burning during that incident. So far, there's no word from the Baldwin Sheriff's Office on exactly what happened. 6:35 at News Radio. John's got our traffic on the fives.
No accidents to let you know about right now. We're looking at I-10, I-110 are looking very good. Seeing some minor delay if you're heading from Pace into Pensacola via Highway 90, right there where it splits off at Scenic. But other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We will have a cloudy day today with a 40% chance of an isolated shower and thunderstorm, especially as we head into the evening hours. A few storms could be strong. High near 71 degrees today, low tonight near 66. For Saturday, showers and thunderstorms likely, especially in the late half of the day going into Sunday morning. Severe threat possible with this under a level 1 and 2 out of 5. 72 for your high on Saturday. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65 degrees. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 62 in Pensacola, 61 in Gulf Breeze, 57 right now in Milton. Your next news at 7 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields were slightly higher this morning after a mixed set of data on weekly jobless claims. The yield on the 10-year benchmark Treasury was 3 basis points higher at 4.607%. Pittsburgh has the third most expensive utility bills of any city in the U.S. That's according to a new Doxo report. Households in Pittsburgh spent on average $502 per month on utilities in 2023. This is about 35% more than the state and national averages. The Mega Millions jackpot has climbed to $1.15 billion ahead of today's drawing, making it the fifth largest prize in the game's history. But how much would you take home? Everyone would owe on federal taxes on lottery winnings, but 8 states don't tax lottery winnings at all. This includes California, Florida, New Hampshire, and more. Futures are slightly lower. Thursday, the Dow Industrials gained 28, the NASDAQ down 10, and the S&P 500 down 2. That's Your Money Now.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Eyezervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Eyezervay gets GA going slower.
Eyezervay or Avacincaptad Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Eyezervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Eyezervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Eyezervay today.
Eyezervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Eyezervay.com. That's Eyezervay.com.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate, from managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
Change. Positive change is happening all around us. Greater Pensacola is growing. And that's why I joined the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Join us. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
It's weed, not alcohol. It just relaxes me. I'm a better driver when I'm high. I do it all the time, no problem.
THC reduces your reaction time by half a second, impacting your attention, coordination, and lane tracking. A delay of just half a second can be the difference between life and death. Stay alert, stay alive. Don't drive high.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Transportation, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
When you do grant applications, they ask you how ready you are for the project. You don't put grant applications in without a site identified, without permits, without engineering. I wouldn't even have been able to apply for any of these without the sites identified. And we've got it all permitted. And I'm gonna be honest with you. This is close to my heart. I believe in this project. I think it'll be wonderful for the city of Milton. It's doable, it's fundable. But if you change course,
it's all going to go away. That's Sandy Woodbury, the grants writer, manager for the city of Milton. She's in a new position now. I forget exactly what her new title is. But that's what she is. She's the one who got all the money to make this project happen. Depending on which amount you believe, $50, $60, $80 million, depending on how you count some of the money. And she lives on Cooper's Basin. Like, the big opposition has come from Pam Mitchell, who lives on Cooper's Basin and doesn't want this thing in her backyard, even though it's permitted and engineered and proper and appropriate, and has raised a scare among all the good people of Milton, who are terrified now that this plant's going to, what, explode or slide down the hill or fall in the Blackwater River or whatever version of the exaggeration has become the most recent one. Sandy Woodbury also lives on Cooper's Basin and says, I believe in this project. I've worked to make this happen because this is a good project. Like, she's literally the opposite of the NIMBY. The NIMBYs who have opposed this, and she's like, in my backyard is fine. I believe in this project. And she has worked all this, and she's an incredibly effective employee, by the way.
Grants are complex. They don't come free. They all have rules. They have match rules. Like, I don't get into the specific and details because nobody really wants to deal with them but me. But how you balance and what we've managed, what the city of Milton has managed to do two times is a miracle. It's a miracle.
She's not wrong.
When you match multiple grants on a single project of this size, making all the cash matches work, having enough non-federal match, and state match, that is not an easy task to do. And we've done it twice. And I just would hate for something to happen and we lose it all.
You lose the money, you lose the project, you lose the ability to service new business customers who will come in and need sewer treatment. You are going to basically tell people, go build your septic systems instead, because we don't actually care about water quality. We only care about the hyperbolic fears of a couple of people who happen to live right downriver from where they think something's going to go wrong. It won't. That's where we're at with this. She's basically begging the new city council, please don't do something stupid. Well, this particular city council, the four people who got elected primarily to do something dumb, to jettison this project and move it somewhere else. And, well, come hell or high water, they are going to make that happen. And we're getting there in the course of this meeting. Ed Spears, this particular doesn't all that much matter. But Ed Spears is the city manager explaining that we actually have the ability to do this project now. Like, it's ready to go.
We've got the possibility to pay for this project, both the disposal system and the new plant, without raising the rates for our 13,383 water and sewer customers. Not one penny.
That's good.
For every $25 million we have to borrow to make up any gap, it's $12 per month per customer for 30 years.
And you're talking about a project that if you move it, and you've got to re-engineer it because it's a site-specific engineering plan. More on that later. You're probably talking 100, 125, somewhere in that vicinity, because everything is getting more expensive all the time. Instead of a paid-for project at, 60 or 70, you're talking about an unpaid-for project at 100 or 120. It's a good chance, good idea, something you should do.
We have the possibility to do it without raising rates a single penny. Please take that into account.
The question is, what's the risk where it's proposed now? That's my situation. So anyway, that's what it's all about. It's called risk. I live in risk management for a living. And the risk outweighs any additional cost.
I'm sorry. I try to be fair. I really try hard to be fair. But every time Mike Cusack opens his mouth, my opinion of him lowers. I work in risk management. What do you think the risk here is?
So my concern is risk to the river. The river is a viable commodity for this city and this county.
Of course it is.
It's tourism, 100%. You pollute this river, the city's done. Okay? That's what's going to happen. If there's any kind of accident on the 24 acres, You won't have to worry about the citizens. They won't have any services because there won't be any money coming into the city.
So you think that the city manager, the former city manager, the former city council, the engineers at BDI, the permit givers at DEP, the grant givers and all of these agencies, they don't care about the river? Is that what you think? All of those people, and it's on a river. How bad is that? Do you know where the Marcus Bayou ECOA plant is? Do you know where the main location up in Cantonment is located on waterways? It's incredibly normal to have these things on waterways.
Were any people been out there to look at where the 24 acres are? Some people have, right? It's a bad location, period. End of story. And so we need to move it.
Based on your engineering degree? Again, Baskerville Donovan is the engineers who signed off on this NDEP. And I'm actually, in general, I favor the ordinary person looking at something and being baffled by how it can work, how it can be a good thing, and asking good questions, and they ought to get good answers. They have, over the years, consistently gotten all the answers you could possibly ask for. But that's not the point of this. The point is not to get good answers and be reasonable. The point is to act like you know it all, to pitch a fit, and to, exert your will upon what the county does. It's amazing. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. Seeing a minor slowdown if you're on Scenic Highway headed northbound into Pace. You're going to see some minor delays there, just a little congestion. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. If you're working on a project, you need to fix something up around your home, or you're improving it, or you're expanding it, or you're building something. I don't, maybe you build things for a living, or maybe you know, you're just building your own home, which people do sometimes. Pensacola Hardware is a great resource for you, not just for the stuff, okay? You know, they've got the hammers and the nails and the safety equipment and all of that, of course. But they also have the advice. Like, they have been doing this a long time. You know, this company is the oldest in the state of Florida, one of the 50 oldest in the entire United States, 1851. So they have been helping people with supplies and advice and follow the codes and answer the questions and solve the problems for 173 years. That is amazing. And there is an institutional knowledge there that, you know, you just don't get elsewhere. You know, a lot of times you go into a store these days and you don't even bother asking the clerk for advice because you figure you know more than they do. Not at Pensacola Hardware. They will know a lot. And if for some reason you stumble on somebody who doesn't, they'll find somebody who does because they do. That is their business, helping people build things for a living for a long time, like since before the Civil War, like since before there was Levi's. Pensacola Hardware has been around right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street since 1851, helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola. 437-1620. Okay, back to this conversation about the wastewater treatment plant. The paid-for, permitted, site-ready, designed, engineered, ready to go. Just agree. Ah, crap, elections. Dang it.
We've got the money. I just need a decision. And that it's not the 11th hour. It's midnight. And Cinderella's looking for a carriage ride home. And we just need a decision. Okay. And I know it's hard, and I know it's been put upon you. You've been put in this position. It's not enviable. But I know the position you've been put in. But your staff is going to execute what you instruct us to do.
Okay.
We're not debating anymore. I have no new information on this topic.
Oh, and by the way, there's $5 million hanging in the balance from ARPA funds that was going to be used for this, and now if you don't do it, that money goes away unless we can find another use. They actually had a subsequent meeting about this where they did find some other uses. But, you know, there's another meeting between then and now. It's just I have been off the air for so long trying to cover this. But again, the utter drama of the hyperbolic fears. This is Art Brown.
Just up from the 24 acres going back toward the sheriff's department is a brand new substation for Florida Power and Light. Mm-hmm. When they built that, that substation does not weigh that much. Yes, it's very heavy. The concrete slab they put in, they had to put in 65-foot deep pilings to hold it on the hill. I asked them when they were building it and all, and that deep, they said, oh, yes, sir. Our engineers and all said if we didn't put them that deep and all, eventually, because the earth moves and this, that, and the other, it will move down the hill. And they said power lines don't stretch that much. And also, they put in 65 deep pilings. I've yet to hear anything about the 24 acres where the plant's going. But y'all going to keep it from sliding down the hill.
Okay, again, I don't mind an ordinary citizen raising questions, but what you're saying is that BDI is incompetent. You're saying they don't have an answer for this question. They're worried that it is going to slide down the hill.
And I'll let you know that back in 2021, we had a town hall and there was discussion about the design, and our engineers have come at different times. That was one of the times. They've also spoken another time about the design. So I know that your concern about it sliding off the hill has been asked, but thank you for asking it, because we want to hear from everybody who's been out there and has concerns. So thank you, sir.
Thank you for asking a question that's been answered many times before. Good for Heather for actually saying that, but also weirdly pandering to the ridiculousness of some of these things that people are asking. And again, Mike Cusack, the guy who got the ethics charge, had to pay a fine, destroyed public records, you know, I think, my interpretation, committed perjury on his certification that he understands the Sunshine Law, and also managed to bungle completely the only one job that he's ever really been responsible for, which is getting Scott Collins hired properly. That's what the ethics charge is connected to. The guy that got put and just can't understand this whole certification business with BDI and the Wellfield Protection Area.
Well, who certified that it was not on a Wellfield Protection Zone?
Good Lord, man.
Who made that certification?
I don't know if such a certification exists.
it doesn't.
But,
to certify that it's not.
The question that would have been asked is, can you build a spray field in that property. And that answer, based on the current ordinances, laws, and zoning, and permitting through FDP, the answer is yes.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. But he just can't quite grasp this concept that that was the voice of BDI, one of their representatives who was there, Baskerville Donovan. By the way, in the subsequent meeting, kind of an interesting point was brought up by Casey Powell. He said, I don't understand why it is that we are trusting Baskerville Donovan to engineer the new plant. Because, by the way, you know, not to spoil the ending here, but they're going to vote to flush all that money away. They're going to vote to move the plant because they have to, because that's what they got elected to do. The new people who got elected to do this. So they are literally going to do the dumbest thing I've ever seen a city council do in my life. It's just, I was just amazed to watch all of this happen.